right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to HQ Overtime, the official post-game show for Raptors HQ, SB Nation's Raptors team site. My name is John Godis, and HQ editor Harsh Deve will be joining me momentarily to discuss Game 5 of the first-round series between the Pacers and Raptors, a 102-99 win for the Raptors that came right down to the wire. Housekeeping, you can submit your questions for us in the comments of our post-game show article at RaptorsHQ.com or by tweeting at RaptorsHQ and myself at John Godis. That's J-O-H-N-G-A-U-D-E-S. We are definitely going to try to get to everybody. I know everyone's fired up after that one. You can also keep up with this show on the go by downloading the Mixlr app for iOS or Android. We are at Raptors HQ. Harsh, this felt like it was going to be a different show about 45 minutes ago. I felt that we were going to be discussing a loss, but things turned around there in the fourth. I will say off the top that I missed the first half of this one. Probably the best case scenario game for me to do that. But what was your overall impression of this, and where's just your feelings at after that one?
Never in doubt, I guess. Man, like, I don't think you understand how toxic shit got, like, the first three quarters. Honestly, I'm not too sure what just happened. Like, I'm still going through my Twitter timeline trying to figure out how exactly they came back, because I feel like it's going to take me a little while to really have it all register. But the first half, man, they just looked completely lazy, completely lazy. Like, right from the get-go, I thought that the defense looked the worst that it's looked for the entirety of the series. People weren't rotating. The offense was a little bit jumbled. I think only DeRozan was really playing particularly well. They were getting bailed out at the free throw line. Essentially, it was like the scripts were completely flipped from the previous four games of the series, and still nothing was working out. And Paul George was absolutely catching fire. And you know, there was a joke running around on the timeline that the only chance the Raptors have is if Frank Vogel does them a favor and sits Paul George. And that's sort of what happened in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and that one is going to come back to haunt him a little bit. I think the Raptors took advantage. So just to break it down a little bit, the Raptors won this one 102-99. Like I said, they were down by, I believe, 13 or 15 headed into the fourth quarter. They were down by 15 definitely in the first minute of the fourth quarter, and then rattled off a 21-2 run with an insane lineup, really. And that's, I don't have any show notes except for what this lineup was, and I have it in all caps on my computer screen right now. It was Kyle Lowry, Corey Joseph, Norman Powell at the three, Terrence Ross at the four for a long stretch of that run, and then DeMar DeRozan came in after TJ chucked up three threes on one possession and missed all of them. And then Bismack Biyombo, of all people, at five instead of Valanciunas. And they took advantage of the minutes where George was out, which was great, but they kept it rolling once again. And just like in game three, Dwayne Casey wasn't afraid to stick with a lineup that worked for him down the stretch. Or maybe I'm thinking of game two when he benched DeRozan.
Was that game two or three? It was game two.
Yeah, that was game two. But again, he wasn't afraid to bench certain guys for a long stretch of time there. And that was really when the game was won, when Paul George sits down there. Did you expect to see that lineup at any point in the series? Why do you feel like it worked? I feel like I don't have like any analytical ability in my brain right now to figure out why that worked, but no, I think you could try.
No, I think that's going to be a theme of this episode, I guess. But it's just like trying to figure out answers on the fly.
Like, how did that work? It's so crazy to think that you could put Terrence Ross at the four and the Pacers wouldn't just dominate that. Like, they play a slowed down pace. They've been feasting on Terrence Ross the whole series, but the Raptors somehow made it work.
You know what I think? Like, if I had to guess what was happening was, as mobile as Patrick Patterson is, and I thought Damari Carroll looked pretty bad today. Like, he looked very sluggish. I just think they lacked, and especially Jonas Valanciunas as well, who just didn't look like he fit today. I thought the Pacers came out with a different game plan. I thought Frank Vogel made some really interesting adjustments where they would drive baseline and force the weak side, and they noticed that the Raptors have done this all season. The weak side help pushes in, and if they get a guy coming around a screen on the weak side corner for a three, that shot is almost always open. And that's why you have these crazy numbers. Like, I think Paul George was 5 of 11, but that number is sort of dirtied by how many shots he missed towards the end. But Paul George hit 5 threes. George Hill hit 4 threes. Solomon Hill hit 3 threes. And they were getting a ton of open looks. It wasn't even a case of the Pacers just getting hot. Like, sure, there was an element of that, but those were good open looks. And I think schematically, Frank Vogel had a really good game plan today. And I found that Jonas Valanciunas and Patrick Patterson and Damari Carroll just weren't getting it done. And so putting in a smaller lineup with the type of energy that Corey Joseph and Norman Powell have and the mobility that they have on defense, I thought that was a perfect counter to what the Pacers were doing. And, that shows, like, the Pacers scored 9 points in the entire fourth quarter. And that's like a lot of it was in the last like minute and a half.
Yeah. They were 4 of 15 with 6 turnovers in the fourth quarter. Like you said, just 9 points. And yeah. I mean, for me, it's a little less X's and O's, but they just, from the time I started watching to the beginning of the fourth quarter, the team just looked, like you said off the top, they just looked defeated. Like they thought this whole thing was over. And this lineup with all these little guys, you could see from the start of the quarter that Lowry was going to, give it his all. Corey Joseph had a bad game up to that point, but he was a spark plug. And just to go back,
I guess it did start with the defense, though, right? Like, I feel like that entire run was sparked by defensive solidity that they didn't have for the entirety of the game to that point.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Their defense was really good down the stretch, and a lot of when they're successful on defense is when they're, when things are hectic, like it was when they were forcing the Pacers into corners, forcing them to make passes they weren't comfortable with. They played their style of defense. It's how they blew out the team in Game 3, and how they were able to make such a dramatic swing in this one. Just minutes after this one is over, and Dwayne Casey's at the podium right now. I'll try to keep you updated. We appreciate everybody listening to us instead of watching other post-game shows. You're listening to HQ Overtime. I'm with Harsh DeVay. Let's try to look at this big picture, even though it's difficult. Where is this, where does this rank for you as far as like playoff moments in the Toronto Raptors franchise history?
I think I saw Will Liu joke about how Solomon Hill's fingertips are a top five moment in franchise history.
Yeah.
Oh man. I mean, look, man, the good moments for this franchise have been spaced out over like 20 years, like 15 years. And so like we're all like looking at this from like different points in our life when these things happened. Off the top of my head, I there's still an element of fear for me, man. Like, if they don't finish this, I can't properly look back on this as a good moment for the franchise. Like, I think they have to seal the deal either in Indiana or Toronto in Game 7. And once they do that, I'll get the chance to like properly take a step back and reflect on it and, appreciate it for the moment that it was. It's like how Vince Carter's 50-point game in Philadelphia is sort of soured by the fact that they didn't end up winning that series. So I don't know. As exhilarating as it is, it's kind of meaningless if they don't seal the deal. And they did show cracks today. They showed their weaknesses. And I think Indiana will have a chance to exploit that. As long as they have Paul George, they always have a chance. He was unbelievable today. But yeah, man, like, I don't know what to say. Like, I guess we'll see. Hopefully they finish the deal and we can say that this was one of the best moments in franchise history.
Yeah, like if this was an elimination game, I think this probably goes down as the best playoff performance this franchise has put together. But, it's still, like you say, it's a question mark. Game 6 is going to be Friday night, and you would expect that if there is a Game 7, it'll be early on the Sunday, depending on what it's up against. But usually that's Sunday with the Eastern Conference Game 7s go ahead of a Western Conference Game 1 or a Western Conference Game 7. which would mean that the Raptors will probably play at probably 1 or 2, maybe 3 Eastern, which is really short rest coming back to Toronto. So Game 6 is going to be huge, and Dwayne Casey at the podium just said that Friday night's going to be a war. I think both these teams know that if this comes to Sunday, they're both not going to be at 100%, and this really comes down to a pivotal game in Indiana, where both teams are going to have 2 days to unpack this one, figure out for the Pacers what they did wrong, for the Raptors figure out where, you know, that spark plug effort came from. Was it the lineup? Was it just the play of their stars? And then try to get this thing in Indiana on Game 6. So yeah, a lot to be excited about in that one.
I think it's also important to note that you know how we talk about depth doesn't really factor in the playoffs, like rotations are tightened. I think in a weird way, the Raptors' depth really helped them today because it gave them options. Like they went all the way down to 10 men, I think. Like, no, they played nine players today.
Yeah, Scola didn't play today.
But in general, it gives them, like, having nine competent players that you can feel confident in, that gives you options. So, you know, to start the fourth quarter, like, I guess to counter the Pacers bench lineup, which I think I saw a stat today that from Josh Lewenberg that they were the Pacers were outscored 19-1 when Paul George sat, which is that's just silly. In
Yeah.
like 7 minutes, like in 7 minutes, in the 7 minutes that Paul George sat, I was scored 19-1. But in general, like the depth of the Raptors squad really shone through today. That just in terms of giving Dwayne Casey options.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, when Paul George sat down, it exposed their bench once again. Rodney Stuckey had like an all-time bad game, one of 10 in 21 minutes with 3 turnovers. Like that, he just gifted the Raptors the ball in
And
that
he got
position where he
shit-talked
fell
by
into
Drake.
Drake.
Yeah.
Him and Ty Lawson almost looked like they were shaving points tonight. Like the Pacers
Oh.
could have won this one easily if those two guys had played even close to a season
And CJ
average.
Miles, too, man. CJ Miles was really bad, too.
Yeah, it just goes to show you like how much of this team goes through Paul George. George, 39 points tonight, 11 of 19 from the field, 5 of 11 from 3, hit all of 12 of his free throws, was a plus 15, 8 rebounds, 8 assists. Like
Yeah,
this
he
guy is
was.
just phenomenal.
And remember that that's also those are all offensive numbers. He's also a lockdown defender. Generally, today I don't think he had. I thought the Raptors actually did a good job of getting DeRozan off of Paul George, like in terms of finding him some space, getting him loose, creating mismatches. I thought the Raptors did a decent job of that. But again, Paul George is a two-way monster, and today, like he looked like he was going to take the game away from the Raptors almost single-handedly.
Yeah, so I missed the first half of this game, and if we're going to talk about DeRozan, it's not fair for me to give a whole lot of time to that because I didn't see half the game. But DeRozan's line was 34 points. He shot 22 times, made 10 of them, 12 for 13 from the line. You know, after a couple games of going like 0, 1, or 2 times to the line, that's huge for him. Maybe you could talk me through what exactly worked for him tonight and how we can expect that to look going forward.
So I think in general, like the first half was really bad. So it's hard to look back on it as something that they did well. But what they were doing well was because Paul George was such a focal point of the offense for the Pacers, the Raptors did a pretty decent job. Like I'll have to go back and look at the film, but like I thought they were diligent in pushing the ball up the floor quickly so as to create, so as to take advantage of the mismatch that DeMar DeRozan was presented with, because he'd be the first guard down the floor essentially. And so suddenly, because Paul George is the one taking the shot, it's Monte Ellis who's covering for him in transition. So I thought the Raptors were good about that. I thought they did. They had some interesting like wrinkles that they brought forth. Like you know, do you remember the Amir Johnson dribble handoff that would take place in the mid post
Oh yeah.
last year? They brought that back today, like with Bismack Biyombo, and that I felt like
Interesting.
I haven't seen that almost the entire year, and that was a pet play that they brought back today, and he got an easy duck in basket from it, so that was interesting. And in general, I thought he was aggressive. I thought he wasn't settling. I thought that was also very important. He was making it a point to get into the paint and draw contact, and you know, you're going to get, especially with a matchup like he has with Paul George, like he's going to take some tough mid-range shots. Like, it's not ideal, but I think you learn to accept that you're going to get some of that DeRozan. As long as you get enough of the good stuff, you learn to live with it.
Yeah, I thought he was really great tonight from what I saw. He was towards the end of the game, like the last 2 minutes, you could see he was kind of pressing. He took a few mid-range shots. He was pushing for kind of like his moment, I feel like, his moment in the playoffs and put the statement on the win. It didn't happen that way. It came down to a Solomon Hill three that got waved off just on the edge of his fingertips. I've got an image in my timeline right now of that clip with Drake sitting on the ball. I got one that's been put in a Canadian Heritage Moments screen. Yeah. So we are off and running with this moment already.
I thought the other thing – oh, shit. I forgot what I was going to say. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to mention Patrick Patterson and Norman Powell. Patterson did not have a good game, but Norman Powell did. And we'll come back to this. I know a few people had questions about Powell, and we'll address those later. But – he has been, you know, his minutes have been erratic in this series, but every time he's been on the floor, he's just been fantastic. That breakaway dunk to tie the game was one of the more exhilarating moments I've seen in that Raptors dude has game balls, ever. Man.
Holy shit. To go up with that much strength to take off from where he did for a dunk to tie the game, that was unbelievable.
He looked like he lost the ball a little bit on the way up. Like I saw him go up and it looked like he looked like he wanted to jump. I think Sean Woodley tweeted over the rim. He looked like he had that in him, but it was still like that was a monster. He was a monster. Maybe you could talk through Powell and how much we'll see of him. I think we're going to see more of him in game six now if Luis Scola continues to fall out of the rotation. Casey's post-game press conference didn't seem to indicate that he'd lost any confidence in Patterson, even though he didn't have that good of a game. I think we'll probably now see Powell right back into the rotation with regular minutes here.
Yeah, I thought Norman Powell was a little bit tentative and a little bit he was a little too energetic in a way in the first half. Like, he was going for crazy transition layups and missing them, and he was struggling a little bit with Monte Ellis, which was surprising on defense. So I thought that might be it for him in the second half. I thought we might not see him again, especially with Dwayne Casey trusting the guys that he trusts to make a comeback. But no, man, in the fourth quarter, he completely sparked. Like, he was a huge part of the comeback that the Raptors made. And I think it's just he's so intelligent for a rookie. That's what really strikes me about him. Like, he always seems to be in the right place defensively. He's always willing to, you know, use his feet and move and cover the gaps and just play the passing lanes. Like, he's like that steal that he got off of Paul George was to get the transition dunk was it's just masterful. Like, I feel like you don't see rookies do that really, and he's like already there, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I'm always waiting for that moment, right? And you see with rookies where they get a bad turnover, they start to question themselves. It just never comes with Norman Powell. Like, it's so steady. He doesn't make all his shots, but he's that intangible guy, and he does all those little things. I thought he did a good job on George in the minutes he was there.
Yeah.
Maybe you can add to that.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, like to speak to your point about him not hitting his shots, like today I thought he was having an especially tough time with his jump shot, like as tough as we've seen in a while.
Yeah, three.
Exactly. We've gotten accustomed to him like getting like 20 points on, you know, almost 40% from three. But today that wasn't the case. Like, his shot wasn't dropping for him. And the fact that he's still able to maintain a positive impact on the court is a testament to his ability and to his intelligence on the court, that he's still able to find ways to contribute. And I thought that was really impressive. I hope he continues to play. I think what you'll see the Raptors do is not be afraid to go small more. I thought going small was really, really effective for them today. I don't think they need to play with two bigs ever, almost. Like, they can play with one big and like four, like three wing players and a point guard. Like, they can do that. So I think you will continue to see Norman Powell in the rotation, and good. You should. He was really good today.
Yeah. Like, Patterson was the only traditional power forward, if you can call him that, who got any minutes in this game. So I absolutely agree with you. I think that this team is not going to be afraid to go small as this series goes on. They shouldn't be against the Pacers. The Pacers really don't have outstanding power forwards except when they play Turner at that position. Right. So I would expect that to continue. One more topic here before we get to listener questions. If you want to drop in a late one, you can tweet that in at John Gaudes, JohnGaudes, or if you're already signed up to comment on RaptorsHQ.com, you can put it in there. I just want to talk briefly about Dwayne Casey, because this was one of those games where we saw both sides of it from Raptors fans, I feel like. When it wasn't going well for 36 minutes, everybody was ready to, you know, for him to be the scapegoat. He was being outcoached by Frank Vogel. I feel like Vogel's been outstanding with his timeouts. But once Vogel decided to sit Paul George and George Hill for such a lengthy period of time, all things considered, in the fourth, I thought Casey was pretty bold to play such a small lineup. And I think he actually might have won this game for the team, along with, you know, the team's effort is very good. And but he put them in that position to succeed. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, just series and games like this are really hard to gauge the team properly, I find. Like, you know, those issues that people were speaking about for the first 36 minutes of the game, of game time, like, those are real issues, right? Like, this is a superior Toronto Raptors team, a 56-win Raptors team that was about to just be on the ropes against the Indiana Pacers, who basically have one really, really good player, and then George Hill is pretty good too. But they shouldn't have been in that place to begin with. And I feel like with his rotations, he's sort of getting lucky in a sense, because he's throwing enough shit at a wall and something sticking at some point. Because today it took him to get absolutely desperate for anything to work out. Yeah. And he's sort of lucky that the bench has that much talent to for it to work. Like, if he was on, say he had the Pacers roster right now, would that have worked for him? Like, was he lucky that, you know, guys like Norman Powell, ninth man off the bench, are competent difference makers? Like, what would he do with a squad with Ty Lawson and Rodney Stuckey? Do you know what I mean? Like, I it's one of those things where you don't know whether to credit the front office or the coaching staff. I'm generally pro Casey, but, you know, I'm really, I don't know, disenchanted by his playoff performance as a coach.
Yeah, I tend to believe that, you know, coaches should be evaluated on whether they put their team in a situation to succeed. I think in game one, Casey did a really poor job of that for this team. But yeah, since then, he's played generally good lineups. He's made changes probably later than he should have, notably the Scola move to get him out of the rotation. He was playing him too many minutes up till this point. He really should be where he is now, which is on the bench, at least in this series. Maybe he has a place if this team moves on, but you know, I don't think he belonged in this series, and Casey was late on that one. But he's generally put the guys in a place where they succeed. I think tonight it was about that. It was more about the team deciding to start that fourth quarter that they just weren't going to lose this game. And yeah, they, you know, they turned it on just like they did in game three. We'll see if we get that kind of effort to start game six. Their starts generally need to be better here. But, you know, when they do put that intensity into the game, they are one of the better teams in the NBA. So
Let me ask you a question. Would you say that this was, sorry, I'm stealing your show, but
go do it.
Would you say that this was more of a choke job by the Pacers, or the Raptors just, you know, being the team that they're supposed to be?
I would go with the latter. I think the only bad thing the Pacers did was sitting Paul George and George Hill together in that short span of time, which wasn't that, you know, long of a period of time. Just the Raptors just exploded to start that quarter. This was a close game from, I think, about the 6 or 7 minute point of the fourth quarter on, which is incredible to think about considering how far behind they were. I would put it more on the Raptors. Generally, when this series has gone in their favor, it's been because of the Raptors and not because Indiana has played well. Like you said earlier, Indiana's really done a great job with the talent that they have, which is not a whole lot.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I would say that I can see valid reasoning for either argument. I would personally say that the Pacers choked it away just because, I mean, scoring 9 points in a quarter, like, come on, man. Like,
they had to calm down at some point, and they never calmed down. I'll say that.
No.
They had to figure out a way to, you know, take more of the shot clock, you know, be more solid in their offense. But the Raptors can discombobulate a lot of teams, and they did that to the Pacers down the stretch.
They looked a lot like the Raptors in the first half of last game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a weird game, man. Like, I hated 36 minutes of it, and the last 12 minutes are supposed to win me over, but I'm sort of hesitant, but I should be happy, but I don't know how to feel, you know?
Game by game, moment by moment, and now we're seeing, like, minute by minute, we have to evaluate this team separately. So,
exactly.
We'll see what we see on Friday night. I'm not sold either way. Let's start looking at people's questions here. We got quite a few of them, and only a few of them are semi-serious. Jason Hindle, at Jason Hindle, asked, should Scola start game 6? I'll let you handle that one first.
No, I think the Scola experiment's done. Like, I thought Patterson didn't have a great game today, but we've seen that the Raptors can get away with going small, and it's almost recommended to go small at times. And Patterson is the most mobile big man that they have. So I really like having Patterson in the starting lineup as the mobile big that you need. And then just work around with Jonas Valanciunas and Bismack Biyombo. And then plug in Damari Carroll at the four if you need. And apparently, you can go with Terrence Ross at the four twos now. So yeah, there's a lot of options. So I don't think Scola needs to play at all.
Yeah, I agree. Like, this isn't a series for him. He was getting beat up by the Pacers. And, you know, he's gotten beat up quite a bit down the stretch by opposing power forwards. I just think that you're right. This team can afford to go small against the Pacers, and they've had success now in, you know, two or three games doing that. So I would expect that to continue going forward here. At Swar Lasers, what is even life right now? Please explain. I don't know, man. Tim and Sid are still on my TV, and I still haven't processed this. That's the problem of doing post-game shows right after a game ends. So you don't have any time to figure this out.
Yeah, because usually you have, like, post-game shows that, you know, the narrative of the game, like, plays out over, you know, 24, 36 minutes. Like, you get half an hour of really kind of knowing what the result is and what went wrong. But, like, you know, this game had wild swings, man. It had, like, three or four absolutely wild swings. Like, consider, like, we haven't even talked about the end. Like, once the Raptors took a six-point lead, I thought it was done.
I knew it was going to come down to something, because that's just how the Raptors are. I hoped beyond hope that shot was late. It looked late to me, you know, on the live broadcast. But man,
it looked to me like the shot clock took forever to start. That might have just been me as a fan, like, hoping that it ends. But I'm like, how did he pump fake and then pass it? And then the dude took forever to set up his shot.
Yeah. Hill does not have the fastest release in the NBA. And, you know, he had to chuck that thing up. And he just took his time. Like, he took his normal. Yeah, it was crazy. Let's do one more here. This one is another WTF question from Edwin. Seriously, win or lose, what the fuck? I don't know. We're just as in awe as you are. Okay, semi-serious from Elopan. Chuck, is Norm already better than Ross? And that's a decent question. A lot of people can go different ways on this. I don't know where you are on that.
No, I don't think so. I think Terrence Ross has value. Like, even those, you know, the possession that you alluded to, the one where he missed three straight three-pointers. I didn't think any of those shots were particularly bad.
Not for him. And I mean, I thought all of them were going in.
Exactly. And I think – and he has this quick strike offense to him, like this ability to really not need too much space on his shot, and that bails them out a lot. Like, a lot. Like, you don't really notice it, but there's a reason why him being in that five-man unit with Lowry in the bench is so effective. It's that he's such a perfect outlet on the perimeter, because he needs just a sliver of space to hit shots. And offensively, that's all you need from him. And that has value, right? Like, three-pointers are extremely valuable, as we know. And defensively, he's a work in progress. Like, I don't think he'll ever be much better than he is now, but I don't know. He has value. Like, he's a good offensive player. I think Norm today looked really, really good in the fourth quarter, but he had moments in the first half where he looked a little bit overwhelmed, just a little bit out of control. And I think once he reins that in, he has all the tools to be better than Terrence Ross, but I don't think he's there yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Norm Powell might be more solid on defense right now, but yeah. Terrence Ross is like one tier below Kyle Korver on the, like, you've got to give a shit about this guy on the three-point line, crowding him meter. And then Norm Powell has kind of the more effort guy going for him. Like, he is caring a lot more, or at least visibly, on the court than Terrence Ross is. So I think down the road, I agree, I think that Norm Powell will probably become a better player than Terrence Ross is, given that he'll probably get better with his shot. But I think right now, Ross is more valuable to this team, especially, you know, for a team that needs its two stars to drive to the basket to create, having to hug Terrence Ross on the outside creates lanes for that. We got another what the fuck question. I agree. Like, I agree with all of you.
I feel like we're, our calmness is sort of hiding how nuts of a game that was.
If I didn't have to do this show, I'd still be running around my apartment. I had to take like 3 minutes there.
Yeah, like, I just want to scroll through Twitter and be like, and like read about what the hell just took place. Like, that, I don't know how they won, man. I got to be honest.
I'm just going through the comments here on the HQ article. Who the hell is this team? And Norm Powell, how good can this guy be? And where do you see him in the rotation next year? Oh, that's a question. Sorry, I got to read these things on the fly here. Do you see him in the rotation next year?
Oh, geez. Well, that's a loaded question. I can try
to handle this first. A lot of it depends on whether DeRozan comes back, and that changes minute to minute along with the Raptors' fortunes. I would say that Norm Powell is going to be where he is now, probably an eighth or ninth guy.
Yeah, I think there's a chance for him to break into the rotation. Like, I think the Raptors are in a situation now where they have four legitimate wing players. That they can play like heavy minutes or heavy-ish minutes with Carroll, DeMar, Ross, and Powell. There's a chance that one of them gets traded, and I think that's a possibility. Or I think there's a possibility that they start next season with only three of the four. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
I think as far as how good he can be, man, like, look, I've seen people say that there's no chance that he turns into a star. And look, this has come back to bite me before, because I thought Terrence Ross was the second coming of like Tracy McGrady. But there's something there, man. Like, I get that he's old. I get that he's already 24, turning 24 this year. I understand all that. But if his shot comes around, I've seen enough of his dribble game and his defensive ability and his transition game even his passing is not bad, to say that there's a chance that he ends up being a pretty good player. Like, if he turns out to be a Wesley Matthews, would you be shocked?
Yeah, no, not at all. I think about where DeRozan was, and obviously DeRozan is a workhorse, not like many players in the NBA right now. But think about where he was and how he slowed his game down. He was a slasher, similar to Hal Powell, kind of that reckless attacking shooting guard. But he's grown with the ability to get into space, draw fouls. I think I could see that happening to Powell too if he works on his game and works on, you know, his basketball IQ along with his shot. He might have a high end, maybe not quite at DeRozan, but I wouldn't be shocked. Like, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
Okay. Good question to end here. And by the way, that question was from Moran in the Raptors HQ comments. This one's a good one to end on. Which was the best Raps game this year so far? It's probably between Lowry's 43 versus the Cavs tonight's game and Corey Joseph's winner against the Wizards. Crazy comeback against Atlanta. That's what he mentions. I would throw in the two games against Golden State as being, you know, losses, really phenomenal games to watch.
Yeah.
The Lowry win over the Cavs was so important at the time that I don't think you can really jump past that one at this point. Although this is a playoff game, it was a game five. Again, given time to unpack, I think that this one, you know, felt to me just as important. So probably in time, I'll probably think of this one as probably more important than that one against the Cavaliers. I don't know about you.
Again, I'll say this. If they win the series, this is the most important win of the season. Because I don't think they win the series if they lose this game. I think the Cavs win is probably a more memorable win at this point, just because, like the statement that Kyle Lowry made in that game, that he was, you know, on the tier of being a superstar. I know this is a bad time to talk about Kyle Lowry as a superstar, given how he's played this series. But I thought that was insane, man. Like, just do you remember the ACC, like that game, like the crowd? And it was like a Friday night, wasn't it? I think it was a Friday. And yeah, especially with that backbreaking shot to seal the game, like he literally did everything that game. Yeah. So I'd say it's that one. It felt amazing at the time because of the tiebreaker as well. So yeah, I'd probably go with the Kyle Lowry one.
All right, that is what we've got for questions here. So I'm going to call it there. I think there's going to be some more thoughtful takes on this game at Raptors HQ sometime in the next 12 hours, probably more thoughtful than what we've provided here in the last 25 minutes. What have you got coming down later this week?
Well, I was going to do a harsh take if they lost today. So
there's still
I guess
time. They could lose on Friday.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I'm saving it for later. But no, nothing down the line for me yet. Let's hope they keep it going, I guess.
That's my hope too. I kind of like doing this show. I'd like to do it for another round. Hopefully we can get you on at some point. For game six, we've got Sean Woodley coming back, and we've got the debut of Daniel Hackett joining us. We've got a special two guests for the elimination show. So we'll be back for that. You can look for the post-game thread on RaptorsHQ.com and tune in from Twitter at RaptorsHQ or go on our Facebook page, which is RaptorsHQ.com. You can also subscribe to archived episodes of this show and our weekly podcast, The Headquarters, on iTunes, and give us a rating and review. It is always appreciated. Thank you, Harsh, for joining me. We'll hopefully get you on sometime in the near future.
Anytime, man. I was completely incoherent, but I blame the game.
Yeah, we'll try to get our heads about us and come back and talk about Game 6 on Friday. That's HQ Overtime, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.